I've often wondered, and it still puzzles me, why don't we all act the same when all of Greece is under the same sky and we all get pretty much the same schooling? I'm Polyclice, and I've spent my 99 years observing and interacting with a wide array of people. After seeing the best and worst of us, I felt compelled to write down what drives different kinds of people in life. I want to map out various behaviour patterns and their life strategies. I think it's crucial for our kids to have access to such insights, helping them pick the right company and avoid bad influences. Now let's dive into the conversation. Stay sharp and see if what I say adds up. I'm going to kick things off by discussing those captivated by irony, cutting through a long-winded intro and deep dive into the topic. First, I'll tackle the concept of irony, then move on to describe the ironic personality, what they're like and how they act. I'll also aim to clearly categorize different emotions, setting them up as I originally planned. Irony often looks like someone intentionally playing down their true thoughts and actions. An ironic man might, for instance, chat with enemies as though they were long-lost friends. He might compliment people right to their faces while privately disagreeing with everything they stand for, or show compassion for those who failed. He might even forgive those who badmouth him and keep his cool when people criticize him directly. He's the kind who speaks softly to the upset or wronged and tells keen listeners to check back later. He'll dodge revealing his true intentions by saying he's still thinking things through. He might act clueless in new situations or too fragile to deal with any real trouble. To those asking for a loan or some help, he claims he isn't selling anything, but then turns around and says he is when he's actually not. If he overhears something, he pretends he didn't, and if he sees something, he'll deny it. Even when he agrees with something, he might later act as though he's forgotten about it. He often pretends to consider ideas he's clueless about, or feign surprise, sometimes even claiming he had the same thoughts before. His typical way of talking includes phrases like, "I don't believe it, I can't imagine," "I'm shocked," or "You're telling me he's changed." He might also throw in an, "This doesn't make sense to me, tell that to someone else," or "Am I supposed to believe you and doubt him? I'm baffled." This style, full of twists and evasive tactics, is classic for ironic men. They favour complex, cunning ways over simple, direct communication, and it's smarter to keep your guard up around them than to take them at face value. Flattery can be seen as a distasteful exchange that only benefits the flatterer. A flatterer himself could be the guy who, while you're walking together, might say, "Do you realise how much people respect you? No one else in this town gets this kind of attention. At the gathering yesterday, you were all anyone could talk about." He's the type who might brush off a speck from your clothes, or pick a straw from your hair and, with a grin, say, "Look at that. Just a few days away from you and your beard has gone completely grey, though your hair's still dark for your age." When you talk, he shushes others to listen and praises every word you say. If you pause, he urges you to go on, and if you crack a joke, he laughs excessively, pretending he can't contain himself. He tells everyone to hold up until you've passed by. He might buy treats for your kids, hand them out right in front of you, kiss them, and say, "Only a great father could have such wonderful kids." He notices how well your shoes fit compared to your sandals. He might run ahead to a friend to announce your arrival, then double back to confirm with you, "I've let them know." He's also quick to lend a hand with menial tasks, like carrying women's shopping bags without even a break. At meals, he's first to commend the wine and, hanging around longer, might comment, "You eat so gracefully," then snatch a bite and rave, "This is delicious," while offering you more. In the theatre, he might fuss over your comfort like a servant. He'll compliment your house's layout, how well your fields are planted, and how a portrait is the spitting image of you. In essence, a flatterer is all about observing everything and doing or saying whatever he thinks will win over the person he's trying to impress. Rambling is when someone just goes on and on without any real point. Imagine a guy who doesn't really know you but decides to plop down beside you and immediately starts bragging about his wife. Next thing you know, he's recounting the dream he had last night, then describing every single item he ate at dinner. As he keeps talking, he might complain about how people today don't measure up to ancient standards, chat about recent market fires, mention the influx of tourists, and discuss how busy the shipping lanes are from Dionysia. He might wish out loud for more rain for better crops, share his grand plans for farming new land, or moan about how hard life is. He could drop in details about how Domipos lit a huge torch for the mysteries, or even start counting the columns in the Odeon out of nowhere. Suddenly he might say, "I was sick yesterday," or throw out a random, "What day is it today?" If you don't excuse yourself, he'll just keep talking non-stop. He'll drone on about various festivals like the Mysteries in Boedromion, the Apaturia in Pianopsion, and the rural Dionysia in Poseidon. Honestly, if you value your peace of mind, it's best to steer clear of such folks because they're just exhausting to be around, as they never take anything seriously. Being boorish is basically a mix of ignorance and crudeness. A boor might start his day with a stiff drink before even hitting a public event, and he's convinced nothing smells as good as myrrh, even though his oversized shoes and booming voice say otherwise. He's suspicious of his own family and friends, but strangely trusts his servants with his deepest secrets. He loves to recount every detail of what happened at social events to the workers in his fields, often sitting in a way that exposes too much of his legs. In town, he barely pays attention to anything unless he spots an ox, a donkey, or a goat. At home, he raids his pantry, eating and drinking like there's no tomorrow. He's known to bypass the local baker to grind his own flour. Sometimes he's so unrefined that he'll eat the same meal as his farm animals. And yes, he's the one who eavesdrops at his own door, talking to his dog about how it's the protector of his home. When he receives money, he complains it's too worn and demands a swap. If he's ever loaned you any tools, a plough, a basket, a sickle or a bag, he'll wake up in the middle of the night remembering it. In town, he's the guy asking everyone about the prices of hides and preserved fish, wondering if it's the day of the new moon festival, and then out of nowhere, deciding he needs a haircut. At the bathhouse, don't be surprised if he breaks into song or hammers nails into his shoes to fix them himself. He always picks up his preserved fish from the same old vendor near Archias's shop. People-pleasing is about making an impression rather than truly enjoying oneself. The people-pleaser is that guy who, from afar, shouts greetings, calls you a great man, and clings to your hands a bit too long. He'll walk you out, asking when he'll see you again, showering you with compliments as he leaves. If he's invited somewhere, he doesn't just try to charm the host. He'll also butter up the host's rival to seem fair and friendly to everyone. He might claim that foreigners are more just than locals. At dinners, he pushes the host to bring the children to the table, greets them with, "You're just like your dad," then sits beside them, making conversation and playing simple games while letting his meal digest. He always keeps himself well-groomed with regular haircuts, white teeth, fine clothes, and uses perfume. He hangs out in markets and gyms, sits near generals at shows, and though he buys nothing for himself, he sends fancy gifts everywhere, dispatches to Byzantium, Laconian dogs to Cyzicus, Hymettian honey to Rhodes, and brags about it all back home. He's also into exotic hobbies, like raising monkeys, buying partridges, Sicilian doves, and oddities like stag's knuckle bones, round jars from Tharia, and crooked staffs from Lacedaemon. He owns flashy things like curtains embroidered with Persian scenes, a dusty old wrestling school, and a ball court, and he loves showing all this off to philosophers, sophists, gladiators, and musicians. At sports events, he's often whispering to someone to pass on a comment to let everyone know this is his wrestling ring. Coarseness means putting up with offensive remarks and actions without flinching. A coarse man is known for swearing up a storm, ignoring insults thrown his way, and often hurling them back. You can spot him by his crude public antics. Imagine seeing this guy dancing soberly yet wildly to loud music, wearing a mask and playing up the comedy. He's quick to start petty arguments or squabble over things like dowries. You might find him running a brothel, collecting taxes, or involved in any other kind of shady business without a hint of embarrassment. He could be the one shouting in the market as a town crier, cooking in public, or gambling away into the night. He might even neglect his own mother, dabble in petty theft, and spend more time behind bars than at his own home. His behaviour tends to attract attention, especially during festivals, where he'll be the loud, argumentative figure drawing in the curious and repelling the prudent. He adjusts his approach based on who he's talking to, relishing the opportunity to showcase his coarse nature during holidays. He's also quite skilled at navigating the legal system, dodging some charges, pressing others, and always ready in court with a stack of documents. He's known in the marketplace for offering loans with exorbitant interest rates on the spot. A regular at kitchens, fish markets, and delis, he's always looking to make a quick buck, his loud and abusive voice echoing through the market stalls and shops as he conducts his rough business. The blabbermouth is that person who just can't help but dominate every conversation. He dismisses others' opinions as trivial, convinced he knows it all, constantly insisting that there's something to learn from him. Famous for cutting people off with phrases like, "Did you just say that?" "Hold that thought," or "That reminds me." He barely lets anyone else get a word in, shaping the dialogue so it's almost suffocating for the other person. He's tiring one-on-one and absolutely unbearable in groups, driving people away from what could have been enjoyable chats. He intrudes into educational settings like schools or training areas, disrupting the learning process by bombarding everyone with his non-stop talking. His relentless chatter drives people to leave, walking home just to get away from his voice. Whenever he picks up on gossip or news, he rehashes it to death, dredging up old debates or historical tidbits, and loves to remind everyone of the times his speeches stole the show. Even in a crowd, his endless narratives turn into monologues that push listeners to either tune out, doze off, or sneak away. In any formal role, whether as a judge or an observer, he's more of an interference than help. He talks through meals, convinced his tongue is unstoppable, saying he'd out-talk even the chattiest of birds. His own kids mock him by asking, "Tell us more so we can fall asleep." Gossip is all about spreading juicy yet false stories with a zeal that makes you almost believe them. A gossiper meets a friend with a knowing grin and launches into a barrage of probing questions. "Where have you been? What's new with you? Heard anything interesting lately?" He bombards them with follow-ups, giving them hardly a moment to reply. "Any fresh gossip? There's got to be some good news, right?" He interrupts with quips like, "What's that you said? You haven't heard anything? I thought you'd be bursting with new tales." He boasts about having insiders everywhere, a soldier, a musician's kid, a contractor fresh off the job, all allegedly dishing him exclusive scoops. His stories are so elaborate and dramatic that they're tough to refute. He spins tales about generals in victorious battles, high-ranking politicians embroiled in scandals, and presents these rumours as the talk of the town. He insists that his stories align perfectly and claims a recent arrival from Macedonia in town can verify every detail. He adds drama with remarks like, "Poor Cassandra, such tragic luck, he used to be on top of the world," and "I'll tell only you," as he scurries around the city, spreading these rumours to anyone who'll listen. It's both intriguing and exhausting what gossipers aim to achieve. They spread fabrications and manage to wear out their listeners' patience, whether causing a stir in bathhouses, claiming victories in fictitious battles, or boasting about conquering cities. Their love for drama seems endless. His life becomes a sad show of gossip, filling every public space, workshop, and market corner with their relentless, tiring tales. Shamelessness means having zero regard for decency, all in the name of personal gain. Imagine someone bold enough to steal from you and then audaciously ask for a loan, or someone who makes offerings to the gods only to sneak away with the sacrificial meat to dine at someone else's house, hiding the goods in various nooks. He might invite his servant to a meal, stealthily take some meat and bread from the table, and then loudly proclaim for all to hear, "Enjoy your meal, Tobias." At the butcher's, he reminds them of past favours so he can snag the best cuts, or at least a bone to enrich his broth. If he gets his way, perfect. If not, he'll swipe something off the counter while chuckling as he makes his exit. He watches shows with friends but dodges paying his share, only to use the same tickets the next day for his sons and their tutor. If someone snags a great deal, he demands a cut. He shamelessly borrows barley or straw from others, insisting they deliver it right to his doorstep. His shamelessness extends to public baths too. Upon entering, he might grab a bucket of water, and despite the attendant's objections, douse himself, declaring he didn't really bathe, and thus owes nothing as he strides out. Tight-fistedness means being super stingy about spending money, only parting with cash when absolutely necessary. A tight-fisted man might make you pay your rent in tiny instalments throughout the month. At meals, he keeps a keen eye on how many drinks each person has and serves up the smallest slice possible to the gods. At the market, he scrutinizes every potential purchase, always griping that the prices are too high. If a servant breaks a dish or a pot, he docks it from their pay. If his wife misplaces even a tiny coin, he'll turn the house upside down, from furniture to storage boxes, to find it. When he sells something, he prices it just high enough to stop you from shopping elsewhere. He won't let anyone pick up even a fallen fruit or nut from his yard, or walk through his fields, and he's obsessive about checking his property lines to ensure no one's encroaching. He's the guy who charges interest on late payments, and then interest on the interest. At community dinners, he slices the meat into minuscule portions. Shopping trips often end with him returning home empty-handed. He forbids his wife from using even small essentials like salt, oil, cumin, oregano, olives, garlands, or incense, arguing that these little expenses add up over time. Overall, tight-fisted people keep their bursting safes locked tight, wear slightly too small clothes to save on fabric, use the smallest oil flasks, keep their hair cut short to avoid frequent trims, wear shoes only in the afternoon to minimise wear, and instruct tailors to use earth-coloured fabric so dirt isn't as visible. Rudeness is easy to spot. It's behaviour that's blatantly inappropriate and often embarrassing. A rude person might, for instance, provocatively expose himself when encountering women in public. In the theatre, he claps thunderously long after everyone else has stopped, or whistles at performers while everyone else is silently appreciative. And during a quiet moment in a play, he might belch loudly, turning heads in disgust. In a busy market, he'll stand by the snacks, nuts, myrtle, dried fruits, and eat loudly while chatting up the vendor just to draw attention. He calls out to acquaintances by name, forcing them into awkward conversations. He'll spot someone in a hurry, insist they stop and wait just to hold them up. If he sees someone coming out of the courthouse after losing a big case, he'll approach them with a grin to congratulate them sarcastically. He hires musicians for his own amusement, then flaunts his purchases to everyone he meets, urging them to admire his latest acquisitions. He might even linger outside a barber shop or perfumery, telling passers-by he's on his way to get drunk. This behaviour not only showcases his lack of manners, but also his eagerness to disrupt the calm and comfort of others, making public spaces revolve around his antics and craving for attention. Being inappropriate is all about causing awkwardness or discomfort during social interactions. An inappropriate person is the kind who barges in when you're busy, dumping unwanted details or problems on you. For example, he might visit his sick girlfriend to entertain her despite her illness, or approach someone fresh off losing a lawsuit to ask for a debt guarantee. He could offer himself as a witness in a legal case that's already been settled, or find fault with the bride's family at a wedding. Imagine him insisting on a walk right after you've returned from a long journey. He's the guy who might introduce you to a higher bidder right after you've shaken hands on a deal. He insists on re-explaining things to people who've already understood the first time, starting all over again. He's keen on managing tasks that nobody actually wants done. He shows up demanding interest on investments at completely inappropriate times, like during religious sacrifices or while you're handling large expenses. He's even known to reminisce about his own childhood punishments while standing next to a servant being whipped, sharing tales of how he nearly died from similar beatings. And at negotiations, he stirs up conflict, even when both sides are eager to settle. At parties, he might start dancing and drag someone who is sober into it, making everyone else cringe. The busybody meddles in everyone else's business, pretending to help but usually just getting on everyone's nerves. A busybody is the guy who makes promises he can't keep, and the moment something is agreed upon, he's there contradicting it. He might tell a servant to mix more drinks than the guests could ever drink at a gathering. He jumps into disputes between strangers, often trying to take charge and getting lost instead. He could be the one asking a military commander about troop deployments and next day's orders without any business knowing. He might go up to a man just to pointlessly inform him that his wife has already gone to bed. When a doctor advises against giving wine to someone ill, the busybody pushes for it anyway, claiming it might help the patient recover. After someone's wife passes away, he goes overboard with the tombstone, adding not just her name but also her husband's, her parents', and comments on how wonderful they were. And when it's time to swear an oath, he can't help but announce to everyone nearby that he's an old hand at taking oaths. Stupidity is essentially a lack of mental agility, noticeable in both conversation and actions. Take the guy who, after tallying up some figures, turns to his neighbour to ask, "How much is it?" Or the one who skips town to avoid justice but forgets and wanders off to the countryside instead. He's the kind who falls asleep in the theatre and gets left behind by everyone else. Or the one who, after a big meal, gets up in the middle of the night as if to go to the bathroom, only to get bitten by the neighbour's dog. He misplaces things and then can't find them, even though he's the one looking. When told about a friend's death and asked to come to the funeral, he might confusingly reply with a sad face but tearfully exclaim, "Heaven be praised." He forgets to bring witnesses when going to collect a debt he's owed. He scolds his child in winter for not buying cucumbers and drives his kids to practice wrestling and other intense exercises until they faint. In the kitchen, he might spoil a pot of lentils by accidentally doubling the salt. During a pitch-black rainstorm, he might remark, "The stars are lovely tonight." And in a somber discussion about casualties at the sacred gates, he bizarrely says, "I wish we could have that many." Unfriendliness is basically a stubborn unwillingness to interact pleasantly. An unfriendly person, when asked something like, "Where is so-and-so?" might snap, "Don't bother me with your questions." If greeted, he might not even bother to respond. When selling something, he doesn't just state the price. Instead, he challenges buyers to guess what it's worth. To those who invite him to events or try to honour him, he bluntly says he wouldn't attend even if they offered him gifts. He shows no patience if someone accidentally bumps into him, shoving past or stepping on his foot. If a friend asks him to chip in for a joint gift, he declares he won't contribute anything, only to show up later with the money, grumbling that he's just throwing his money away. If he stumbles on a stone in the road, he might curse the stone itself. He's not one to wait for anyone, no matter how important. He refuses to sing, speak publicly, or dance. Notably, he's also the type who would outright refuse to pray to the gods. Superstition is essentially a deep-seated fear and reverence for the supernatural. A superstitious person might repeatedly wash his hands and keep laurel leaves from a sacred site in his mouth all day as a talisman. If a weasel crosses his path, he won't continue until someone else walks ahead or he tosses three stones across the road. If he finds a snake in his house, he might either call upon the gods or immediately set up a shrine if he thinks it's a sacred snake. He could be seen pouring oil from a tiny flask onto greasy stones at crossroads, then kneeling down to pray before he moves on. If mice gnaw through a grain sack, he'll consult a soothsayer about what to do next, and regardless of any practical advice to simply repair it, he'd prefer to perform a ritual sacrifice. He often purifies his house, claiming it keeps evil spirits at bay. If owls screech while he's out walking, he gets visibly upset and mutters, "Athena is greater," to soothe himself. He avoids stepping on graves, approaching corpses, or being near a birthing woman, believing it protects him from contamination. He might instruct his household to boil wine on specific days, go out to buy myrrh, frankincense and cakes, and spend the day placing garlands on his household statues. After a vivid dream, he'll rush to consult dream interpreters, seers or augurs to figure out which deity to appease. He frequently attends mystic rites with his family. If his wife can't make it, he brings the nurse and the kids instead. He's meticulous about rituals involving seawater, and if he ever sees garlic at a crossroads, he washes his head thoroughly afterwards and seeks a priestess to cleanse him with squill or a puppy. If he sees a madman or someone having a seizure, he spits into his cloak for protection. Ungratefulness is about criticizing gifts instead of appreciating them. An ungrateful person might gripe when a friend sends over some food, telling the servant, "He didn't even invite me over for dinner." When his partner kisses him, he might question, "I wonder if you truly love me from your heart." He could even get irritated with Zeus not because it rains, but because the rain didn't come soon enough. If he finds some money on the road, he'd complain, "But I've never found a treasure." If he buys a slave after extensive bargaining and the seller comments on the slave's good health, he might retort, "How can something healthy be so cheap?" Upon hearing of his son's birth, he might sourly say, "And now half my wealth is gone." If he wins a lawsuit with unanimous support, he criticizes the lawyer for not addressing every conceivable legal angle. When friends pool together money and someone tells him to be happy, he responds, "How can I be when I still have to repay everyone and owe them thanks for this favor?" Suspiciousness means suspecting the worst in everyone around you. A suspicious man might be so distrustful that he sends a second servant to check on the first one he sent out shopping, just to make sure the money was spent properly. When he carries cash himself, he stops every few steps to count it. At night, he quizzes his wife, "Did you lock the chest? Is the cupboard secure? Is the bolt on the door?" Even after she confirms everything, he'll still get out of bed, half naked and barefoot, light a lamp, and verify everything himself before he can settle down to sleep. When collecting debts, he demands witnesses be present, so no one can deny the transaction. He's hesitant to hand over his clothes to a tailor unless the tailor provides a dependable guarantor. If someone asks to borrow a jug, he's likely to refuse unless the person is a close and trusted acquaintance. Even then, he almost demands a guarantor and makes them swear to return it. He tells his slave to walk in front of him rather than behind, to keep an eye on him and prevent escape. To those who owe him money and say, "Tell me how much, I'll pay you back. I don't have time to send it now," he replies, "Don't bother. I'll come with you until you find the time." Grossness involves neglecting personal hygiene to the point of causing discomfort and repulsion in others. A gross man might suffer from ailments like leprosy or severe dandruff, and he lets his nails grow long and filthy, blaming chronic family conditions that he claims are untreatable. He may have ulcers on his shins and infections in his toes that worsen because he ignores them. His armpits are overgrown and extend down his sides, and his teeth are blackened and decaying, making him quite unpleasant to be around. His manners are just as off-putting. He snorts while eating, burps loudly after drinking, and talks with his mouth full, often spitting food as he speaks. If he drinks, he belches obnoxiously. When lying next to his wife on the couch, he quickly falls asleep. In the bath, he uses rancid oil, causing him to sweat excessively. He wears a thick tunic paired with a very thin and stained cloak when he goes out. If his mother practices bird divination, he curses her. When people make offerings or pour libations, he knocks over the cup and laughs as if he's pulled off a great prank. When playing the flute, he claps alone, drowning out others, and rudely tells the flutist to stop immediately. Trying to spit over the table, he might end up spitting on the server instead. Tediousness is basically being annoying without causing actual harm. A tedious man is the type who wakes you up just for a chat. He stops people just as they're about to leave because he wants someone to accompany him on his walk. He's the guy who takes the nursemaid's baby and insists on feeding and soothing it himself, proudly dubbing himself Cunning Grandpa. At meals, he might share unsolicited details like how a bitter concoction helped his constipation, or complain that the bile in the dish is darker than the sauce served. He might embarrassingly ask his grandmother in front of everyone, "Grandma, what day was it when you were in labour with me?" He claims his grandma's cooking is too sweet, which makes him hard to please since he dislikes both hot and cold foods. He boasts about his cool, well-watered garden that grows tender vegetables, insists his cook prepares the meat just right, and describes his house as a bustling inn filled with guests who are like leaky barrels, never satisfied no matter how much he gives. When hosting, he might introduce his parasite to a guest, explaining who they are, and during a toast, he'd claim the drink is crafted to delight guests, while playfully suggesting that other pleasures are available at the brothel. Petty ambition is the pursuit of recognition without any real generosity. A man with petty ambitions is someone who, when invited to dinner, makes a big show of eating at the host's table. He takes his son to Delphi just for a haircut and makes sure his Ethiopian attendant is visible. He only spends coins that are new and shiny. He also buys a ladder and a small bronze shield for his pet jackdaw to play on. He sacrifices an ox and prominently displays its head, adorned with large garlands, across from the entrance so everyone can see his grand gesture. After riding with the cavalry, he hands everything off to his son to carry home, then parades through the market in his finest clothes to be seen. When his Maltese dog dies, he erects a monument with the inscription, "Branch of Malta." He dedicates a bronze ring at the temple of Asclepius, polishing and oiling it daily. He mixes with the Prytanis to be able to report sacred matters to the people. Wearing a bright robe and crown, he stands up to announce, "O men of Athens, we Prytanis have sacrificed the sacred Galaxia to the mother of the gods, and the sacred things are beautiful. Accept the good things." After such proclamations, he boasts to his wife at home about how extraordinarily well he is doing. Miserliness is a deep reluctance to spend money, especially on things that could bring honour. A miserly man might go so far as to dedicate a cheap wooden ribbon to Dionysus after winning a contest, ensuring his name is on it, yet spending as little as possible. At public collections, he finds ways to slip away to dodge contributing. When his daughter gets married, he sells the customary offerings and gives the priests only the bare minimum required by law, making his servants pay for their own food. As a ship's captain, he opts to sleep on the helmsman's mattress rather than use his own to save on wear and tear. He's known for not sending his kids to school during festivals, claiming they are sick to avoid any related expenses. And when out shopping, he carries vegetables in his cloak to save on paying a carrier. He won't leave his house while his tunic is at the cleaners. If a friend is raising money for a cause, he'll take a longer route home just to avoid being asked to contribute. When his wife brings a dowry into their marriage, he refuses to buy a maid. He only hires one temporarily when she needs to go out. He keeps wearing patched-up shoes, insisting they are as good as new, and carefully hangs up his worn-out robe when he sits down to make it last even longer. Bragging is all about pretending to have qualities or possessions that one doesn't actually have. A braggart might stand at a busy intersection, telling anyone who will listen about the vast sums of money he has tied up in ships sailing the seas. He boasts about his money-lending ventures, exaggerating both his profits and his losses, even though he only sends his kid to the bank with a single drachma. He may claim to have served with Alexander the Great, boasting about exotic goblets he's brought back from Asia, and asserting that craftsmen there are far superior to those in Europe, despite never having left his hometown. He'll tell you he's received letters from Antipater, calling him to Macedonia and offering him a lucrative deal on duty-free timber exports, which he claims to have turned down to avoid being seen as too cozy with the Macedonians. He'll boast about donating more than 5 talents to the needy during a famine, even though he can't really afford it. And when someone sits next to him, he might start instructing them to tally up over 600 debtors, assigning believable names to each. He claims not just to fulfill his public duties, but to exceed them. You'll find him at horse auctions pretending he might buy, or inspecting garments priced at 2 talents while scolding his servants for not bringing any money. Living in a rented space, he tells those who don't know any better that it's his family's ancestral home and talks about selling it because it's supposedly too cramped for his lavish hosting needs. Arrogance is essentially showing disdain for everyone but oneself. If you have urgent business, the arrogant man will dismissively tell you he can meet after dinner when he plans to take a stroll. He always makes a point of reminding you about the favours he has done. As he walks down the street, he makes decisions for those who rely on him, asserting his control. When chosen for an office, he declares he's far too busy to serve. He refuses to approach anyone unless they come to him first. He demands that sellers or workers come to him immediately on the same day. As he walks, he doesn't bother speaking to others unless he feels like it. When he has guests, he doesn't dine with them, but has one of his staff look after them. He sends a messenger ahead of him to announce his arrival wherever he goes. He forbids anyone from entering while he is bathing or eating. When it's time for accounting, he orders his servant to handle the details and just give him a summary. When sending instructions, he never writes pleasantries like, "Please grant me this favour," but commands with phrases like, "I want this done," "I have sent for you to provide me," "It will not be otherwise," and "Get it done immediately." Cowardice is a deep-seated timidity that affects one's entire being. A typical coward might complain that the boat he's on feels unstable and too fast, and at the first hint of a storm, he's nervously asking the crew if they've made the proper sacrifices to the gods. He might pester the captain with questions about their course and what he thinks the gods might do, admitting to anyone who'll listen about the bad dream that's got him spooked. In his panic, he'd even hand his jacket to his servant, pleading to be taken ashore. If he's drafted into the army, when the infantry calls for support, he first checks how close the enemy is before he decides to move. At the sound of battle and seeing others fall, he'd claim he forgot his sword in the chaos, dash back to his tent, send his slave to scout the enemy's position, and hide his sword under his pillow, then pretend to look for it desperately. Upon seeing a wounded friend, he'd quickly go to his side, urging him to stay strong and helping to carry him to safety, preferring to tend to his injuries rather than confront the enemy. He'd sit by his friend, chasing away flies from the wound instead of rejoining the fight. When the war horn sounds, he'd stay in his tent, cursing the noise for keeping him from sleeping. If he encounters others returning from battle covered in blood, he'd boast that he faced great risks because he saved one of his friends, bringing onlookers to the wounded man's side and telling each how he heroically carried the man to safety. Oligarchy is characterized by a thirst for power and profit. When it's time to select a leader for a procession, an oligarch might assert that whoever is chosen should have absolute control, dismissing other candidates by insisting, "One is enough and it has to be this man." His knowledge of literature is limited to one line from Homer, "Nothing good comes from many rulers, let there be only one ruler," ignoring the rest of the text. He's known for using exclusionary language, suggesting, "We need to discuss these matters privately, away from the crowd and the market, and stop sharing power." He claims that it should be either them or us who rules the city. Always impeccably dressed, well-groomed, with perfectly trimmed nails, he solemnly declares, "Because of the slanderers, this city is uninhabitable," and complains about suffering in court at the hands of the judges. He doesn't understand why ordinary people bother with public affairs, questioning their motives, and lamenting the ingratitude of the masses who are always dependent on those in power. In the assembly, he finds it distasteful when someone thin and poorly dressed sits next to him. He often gripes, "When will we stop being destroyed by public duties and triarchies?" And, "How I detest the breed of demagogues," blaming Theseus as the first to damage the city by uniting 12 cities into one, thus empowering the populace to eventually overthrow the ruling class, arguing that Theseus deserved his downfall. These are the kind of conversations he engages in with foreigners and like-minded citizens. Late learning is about committing to personal growth, no matter the age. A late learner might start memorizing speeches at 60, only to forget them mid-toast. He picks up military terms like "on the spear" and "on the shield" from his son, and joins the younger crowd in a torch race at the local hero shrines. At the Temple of Heracles, he throws off his cloak and attempts to wrestle a bull. He spends time in wrestling schools, mingling with athletes, and visits theaters to memorize entire performances of songs, repeating them until he gets them right. Eager to stand out at the festival of Sabazius, he rushes to outdo others in front of the priest. In love, he waits at his beloved's door, and after a scuffle with a rival, ends up taking the matter to court. In the countryside, he tries horseback riding and falls, hitting his head. He joins groups that share his newfound interests, struggling to keep up, and plays extended games of chess with his servant. He practices archery and javelin throwing with his children's tutor, pretending he doesn't really need the lessons. Often found in the baths, he shows off wrestling moves to seem cultured, and when women are around, he proudly displays his dance moves. Slander involves demeaning others through malicious speech. A slanderer, when discussing someone, might embellish the story as though reciting a scandalous family tree. He might say something like this. First, about his ancestry. His father was known as Sosias in the army, then as Sosistratus among citizens, and finally as Sosidemos. His mother, from noble stock in Thrace, is called Crinocaraca, a name suggesting nobility back home, and this man, born of such lineage, is nothing but a scoundrel and a menace. He's quick to insult, saying things like, "Those women from that street are like dogs, they snatch passers-by, and that family has terrible character, what people say about their women is true." He also chimes in when others speak ill, adding, "I despise this man more than anyone. His mere appearance is detestable, and his wickedness knows no bounds. Here's proof. Even though his wife brought a substantial dowry and bore him a child, he only gives her 3 coppers for makeup and makes her bathe in cold water on Poseidon's day. At social gatherings, he speaks ill of someone the moment they leave, not even sparing his own relatives. He maligns his friends and family, and even those who have died, claiming he's just exercising his freedom of speech, democracy, and liberty, which he finds immensely enjoyable. Wickedness is a longing for wrongdoing. A friend of the wicked gravitates towards those who have been disgraced in public trials, believing that associating with them will make him more formidable. He might dismissively say about honest people, as it appears, suggesting that no one is truly good and that everyone has a hidden side. Calling someone an honest person is his ironic insult, and he might even argue that a notorious scoundrel is actually more straightforward than others. He acknowledges the negative views others have about his wicked friends, but defends them as intelligent, friendly, and highly capable, claiming he's never met anyone more adept. In public forums like the Assembly or in court, he champions these dubious characters, arguing that judgments should focus on the case, not the person's character. He portrays himself as the people's guardian, protecting them from injustice, and contends that without support for men like him, the community would lack champions of the common good. He's known for siding with the disreputable and frequently appears in courtrooms on contentious cases, ready to support the worst allegations from opponents. In essence, wickedness is akin to evil, and the old saying that like attracts like certainly applies here. Greed is an excessive desire for unseemly gain. A greedy man, when hosting a dinner, might skimp on providing enough bread for his guests. He could borrow money from a foreign guest staying at his house, and, when dividing food, he insists that the one splitting the portions deserves double, conveniently assigning that extra portion to himself. He might serve diluted wine to his friends, and only take his children to the theatre when tickets are free. When travelling on public business, he leaves his city-provided funds at home and borrows from colleagues while overloading his assistant with too much to carry and giving him minimal food. He claims a share of even minor fines by his servants, like coins from the street, arguing they are common property dedicated to Hermes. He's miserly about using oils, criticising their quality while using someone else's supply. A master of calculation, he meticulously measures even the smallest household items to ration them and jumps at any chance to resell items a friend bought for him at a profit. He docks pay from his children's tutor if they miss classes due to illness, avoids sending them to school during holiday-rich months to save on fees, and demands refunds for any slight overcharge. His greed also shows up at communal events, where he insists his servants get their fair share from communal dishes, yet ensures nothing is left for others' servants. When travelling with others, he uses their servants' services while renting out his own and fails to contribute the earnings to the shared expenses. If he hosts an event, he's notorious for running out of essentials like firewood, feigning shortage. If a friend's daughter is getting married, he'll conveniently travel away to avoid giving a gift. And in his dealings, he's known to borrow trivial items that would be too embarrassing for others to ask back.